I'm Professor Neil Feinstein, and this is Conversations with the Creators, sponsored by St. John's Master's Program in Integrated Advertising Communications. Ideas thrive here. Okay. Are you following Corey Martin on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn? If you're not, you should, because his content is fascinating. It spans everything from how to be a successful in influencer marketing to how to be a successful dad. Corey has mad crazy credentials. He is the managing director of creator marketing at Lippi Taylor and an adjunct professor at Montclair State. Most relevant to this podcast, Corey is an expert on PR, influencer, and content marketing. Over the course of his career, which he started in the military. By the way, does the military do influencer marketing?
They do, and it's pretty fascinating. I think if I had the Navy or the Army as a client, I'd be really happy, but they do a lot of really great work and content.
That's really interesting. Well, so today we're going into the war room with Corey, and to get all of his inside stories. Hi, Corey, and thank you for sharing today.
Thanks, Neil. I'm happy to be here.
I have to start every time I turn on the news or open any one of my social media. You know, the big thing is TikTok. So let's just start there. What is going on with TikTok? The sale, the slash ban, is that going to happen? What do you think?
What an appropriate question. I think it'll be interesting to see where we're at when this airs. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, TikTok currently will get the ban will get signed by President Biden. I do believe that fundamentally there will be time for some of the challenges that we'll see will inevitably happen to work their way through the courts. I think we'll see legal challenges not only from ByteDance and from TikTok, but from potentially employees at TikTok. And certainly I think we'll see legal action and challenges about the ban, specifically from creators. We might even see influencers and creators banding together with some kind of complaint or legal action that not only states that it's violating their First Amendment rights, but we might see how it is potentially destroying incomes, destroying small businesses. So I think whereas from a legislative perspective, the die is cast, from a legal perspective and from a future forward perspective, there's a lot to be unearthed. And I think one of the things that I'm recommending that our clients do is essentially stay the course. But when it comes to influencers specifically, have contingencies in place, ensuring that they not only have other channels that they can put content onto, but make sure that they have backups from a strategy perspective. And that's best practice anyways, right? So any time we're building a program, we want to make sure that we're diversifying across platforms. TikTok isn't the only place people consume content. But, you know, essentially it's big news. And hopefully, I fundamentally don't think it's going away though.
So what, well, the obvious closest competitor in terms of style of what they're offering is Reels. And then, you know, since that's offered by Instagram, it has all the other benefits of having, you could do stories, you could, you know, yeah. You can develop a, you know, a just a simple Instagram following without even doing, are they having the same impact in the world? Are influencers that are big on, you know, like our friend that we both talk about, V, is V big on, is huge on TikTok, less so on Reels? Is that true? Or
well, I would say less so on Reels. V is impactful on Reels as well. And I can also speak from the perspective of our family channel, Rainbow Dads, right?
Yeah, sure.
The first big platform that my husband was big on was Rainbow Dads on TikTok with almost 1 million followers on TikTok. But over the course of the last year, Instagram following has risen to over 200,000 followers. When, as an influencer marketer, when we're looking at the equity someone has on TikTok and the equity someone has on Instagram, importantly, Instagram less followers has greater weight, meaning that somebody who has 200,000 followers has as much weight, if not more weight in some cases, as someone who has a million followers on TikTok. And that's because of the transitory nature of some of the TikTok content. People follow people on TikTok because of the content. They're scrolling content first, not the people they follow. On Instagram, oftentimes we're served content from people we follow. I'll say for V in particular, V has a very healthy Instagram following and they'll be just fine if anything happens to TikTok. But they are very passionate about the fact that their demographic, young Gen Zers, consume news through TikTok, less so people on Instagram. So the function of these channels in particular is threatened in some ways when it comes to TikTok because of the nature of the content that they create. But interestingly, there are multiple other platforms too. When you think about how YouTube has developed YouTube Shorts, what we're really looking at is the notion of video consumption habits and how people choose to be entertained by video consumption or choose to consume video for entertainment. That's really the only shift. And with Reels, Instagram is tracking toward the way TikTok services content, but there's just such a bigger universe ecosystem with respect to Meta that has so many more touch points. So I do think if something happened and TikTok went fully away, something would easily and quickly fill the void, just as we saw TikTok fill the void when Vine went away, right? So it's not the end of the story. It is really driven by consumer consumption behavior.
So let me just clarify things. We've mentioned the word V. We're talking about V Spear, who is a content creator and a citizen journalist. Is that a correct?
That's correct. That's good
characterization.
Under the Desk News on both Instagram and TikTok,
which is fantastic. I love it.
They're a great storyteller, for sure.
They are, absolutely. So there are different, obviously, with any media you're choosing, you're selecting media by the people who are consuming it, and that's how you're reaching. So you're saying there is a distinct difference between those people who are consuming content on TikTok, who are consuming content on Instagram, and I'm even going to separate Reels, who are consuming YouTube videos, who are consuming social Facebook videos. I mean, each one of them is a different audience, right?
Yeah, they're different audiences, and sometimes those audiences overlap, but the experience, the consumption experience, is fundamentally different. So when you're scrolling TikTok, you're looking at content that the algorithm serves you, and if that content isn't entertaining, you're not going to like it. But if you happen to like that content, the algorithm is going to give you more of that type of content and will be peppering it with other content that it thinks you might like, right? It's not about the content that you have of the people that you follow. So even if you end up following somebody whose content you like, you're not necessarily going to be guaranteed to be served that person's content on TikTok. However, on Instagram and on Reels, if you like somebody and start to follow them, the frequency with which you see their content is much greater because Instagram's algorithm factors in your followership, or factors in the fact that you follow personalities.
So let's break the code a little bit around the algorithm. What are some of the characteristics that the algorithm, or the behavior that the algorithm will identify and then use to define what content you'll receive?
So I'll caveat, I am not an expert in this, and I'm not a programmer in the sense that, and a lot of that information is proprietary to each platform.
Right.
But I surmise, based on my experience and exposure to the work, both having as a content creator with my husband, as well as a professional in the space, I surmise that consumer, like, likes, shares, views, the way people interact with the content, number of comments, those things trigger a response in the algorithm on TikTok in particular. I think on Instagram, or I believe on Instagram, that's a mix of those elements, as well as the community that you've created. Meta has always been really big on community when it comes to how Facebook interacts with and drives algorithms, the algorithm for Instagram. There is some connectivity between the two, and they use information from Facebook to connect to Instagram. That's why the ad server, I'm probably not even using the right language, but the ad machine is embedded on it on Facebook. So it is very interesting. I think ultimately it's about it boils down to consumption behavior, and that's what the algorithm is tracking. The same is true with YouTube. That consumption behavior, though, I think also layers in completed video views, length of video views. So it's looking at different types of it's looking at duration in a different way. By the way, they're all also looking at discovery, especially TikTok and YouTube. They're looking at how people search to serve them ads. And Twitter is the same way. Twitter is all about discovery-based search system. So is Pinterest for that matter.
Can they measure sentiment? This is, I know we're a little off where we wanted to go, but can, if I comment and I say, oh, this is the stupidest post I ever read, as opposed to, oh, this is a fantastic post, can they determine the sentiment?
Positive sentiment. That's interesting. I don't know. I think I know we as marketers look at sentiment to determine as a KPI for success, right? So I'm looking at percent of positive comments in association with a particular post, and I evaluate the success of a of content that way. I would assume the sentiment is inferred through engagements, so not so much from a qualitative perspective with respect to comments. But with AI, who knows? Maybe they are looking at comment sentiment in some way.
I would imagine they could. I mean, you can read a word, it's pretty easy, and know if it's a positive or so. Let's take this idea of sentiment and use this as a segue into our war stories. I think that, you've had an incredible career. I remember when we had lunch, you were just talking to me about all the brands that you worked on. And one of the brands that I think has had such an incredible impact on the world that you started with way back is Dove.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I have gotten to work on quite a few brands throughout my career, and been a part of some pretty, I think, industry-changing work. The Dove Campaign for Real Beauty, the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, and the work that Dove has done consistently to communicate the value of self-esteem to young women has been powerful. And I have been fortunate to work at agencies that were foundational into launching that work, Ogilvy and Edelman, at different points in time in my career. And when I was at Edelman in particular, one thing that I can sort of put a stake in the ground that did get us a Cannes Lion, one of the first sort of PR Cannes Lions that a PR agency won. It used to be that advertising agencies actually won the PR Cannes Lions, which was crazy. But for Dove Real Beauty Sketches, which was a campaign where essentially a forensic artist drew a picture of a woman as she described herself, and then a stranger met that woman, and then the artist drew the picture of the woman based on the stranger's description after only meeting her for a few minutes. And in every case, the stranger's description was more beautiful and more accurate than the woman's own description of herself. And it really highlighted this powerful insight that of self-perception. And Dove is always based in this notion that only like 5 or 10, I don't remember the exact percentage, 5 or 10 women percent of women think of themselves as beautiful. Dove's mission is to make sure that it's not, that beauty isn't anxiety driving, that it's a source of strength. Anyway, so that campaign, I remember when my client described it to me over the phone, and I had a very frenetic client at the time, and I was scribbling down notes dramatically. And she's like, "There's this new idea out of Ogilvy Brazil, and blah 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 blah. We have to get tons of press for it, tons of media for it." And I was scribbling all this down, and immediately when I started writing the elements, I started the hair stood up on my head, on my arm, and I knew that there was something special about it. The ironic thing and the war story part is most big, large PR agencies have media teams where people who are specialists in pitching media. I started my career picking up the phone, calling reporters, developing those reporter relationships. We don't do that anymore in PR, but back then, even this is maybe 10 years ago or more, we did. My media team told me, oh no, we can't get anything for this. And I'm like, well, the client wants national broadcast. We've got to get something for this. And I still remember to this day, I got so frustrated. I picked up the phone. I called GMA, the Today Show, and all the morning shows. Immediately got a call back from GMA, from Good Morning America. They ran the first segment. Today Show followed. GMA did a follow-up. Like the cascade of press that covered when we started releasing the campaign and making the women who were subjects of the campaign available was just incredible. And it's probably, you know, it's one of those things that when you get the idea, you just work extra hard.
So your role, I mean, one of your main functions in 2024 is influencer marketing. How has influencer marketing been infused into the Dove campaign?
Into Dove? It's interesting. And even back then, the last time I was working on Dove, we had started to engage real voices. Mm-hmm. You know, basically Dove has an others say approach to what they do. And we started to, for our activations, bring in people who at that time were mommy bloggers, who were doing long form digital content. And at that time, we were treating them like they were editorial. So we would invite them to experiences, invite them. And I remember too, because we used to also do massive big events with reporters and editors, entertaining them, bringing them to nice dinners, to shows, things like that.
That's the old fashioned way to do more, to run, to get media.
I remember the first time I went to the client, it was like, well, we need to bring a couple of influencers to this trip, press trip that we're doing. And the response was like, no, we can't do that. Over the years since, you know, Dove has evolved, but it's been a while since I've worked on Dove, but the category in particular, the beauty influencer category, is probably the forerunner when it comes to modern day influencer marketing. Right. And current clients I have today, certainly, you know, we've developed a way to do it right. I mean, I spent the last 15 years trying to understand how it works so I can make it work harder for everybody that I work with.
Right. And oh my goodness, the beauty category seems to be the leader of influencer marketing. I mean, you think of, well, I guess the number one influencer is it still Ronaldo?
I mean, there, when it comes to the beauty space, there are some legendary influencers that are macro, but it also goes in waves. Like there are new influencers that come on the scene, and even, you know, pseudo celebrities.
Right.
When you think about the notion of influence, you have traditional celebrities who kind of paved the way for influencers. And I hate to say it, but the Kardashians really kind of helped sort of establish the model.
Right.
They did other things too that kind of actually helped establish regulation in the space. Got the FTC to provide governance so that we can have the kind of communications that consumers can engage with without feeling that they've had, you know, something pulled the wool over their eyes. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, the beauty influencers were the most sophisticated initially to set up an economy around it, to promote brands, and to even drive sales of those products when released on their channels.
So let's just, like, historically, how old would you say influencer marketing is?
Well, modern influencer.
I mean, I've heard people say, "Oh, yeah, the first influencer was Mr. Clean."
I will tell you, and I tell my class this: influencer marketing goes all the way back to the 1920s, even early 1900s, when advertisers would use third-party credentializers in their ads. They would use, you know, vaudeville celebrities, or they would use a doctor recommended. When you think about the notion of doctor recommended as part of an advertising tactic, that's influencer marketing at its core. Using celebrities to walk a carpet to promote a product or a dress, that's influencer marketing. I say because the influencer industry has gotten so big and there are now influencer agencies, one of the things I say, having built an influencer practice at a PR agency, is that the business of PR has always been the business of influence. And building relationships with reporters is about media influence and making sure that we get the organic attention that we need, earned attention in the right way. Even today's modern influencer marketing is about earned attention. Yes, certainly we pay influencers now for their time and content creation, but we're paying them for a specific thing, either their content, their credibility, or their channel. But the arc of influencer marketing has been an evolution within the earned category for so long. And now, because it was so strong in the earned space, I believe it dominates the entire integrated marketing mix.
It's so funny because I do I that's the word the way I come at it. I say it is really the ultimate hybrid integrated marketing, I guess media you could call it, the ultimate, because it really does. You're paying these influencers, that's the paid, they're you're earning attention and influence through them, and then they, it's almost as if they become owned media because they become so associated with the brand.
They can be, yeah. And it's truly like there's a function for influencers in owned media around creator content, content for owned channels. There's certainly a function in the paid space that the data shows us that influencer-created content performs double digits better than brand-created content, which is candidly kind of a threat to the creative industry when it comes to creative agency content.
But even if you look at a brand such as Martha Stewart, I mean, in many ways, she is the embodied. She is the influencer. She is the brand. She is all of those things. She
Or
owns her.
Mr.
She
Beast.
owned. She's.
Mr. Beast is another perfect modern day example. I would argue Mr. Beast is probably the biggest celebrity
These
in
days,
the
yep.
world today, period.
Absolutely. So Mr. B, let's talk about that. What is the most innovative use in modern times that either you have used in influence, or if you've infused it into a program in a surprising way, or that you know of?
That is the real. So I kind of geek out on the most practical aspects of influencer marketing, how utilizing influencers at scale can drive sales. However, I will say that a lot of creativity can be held and can be had when you partner with the right influencer to carry your brand story, and you happen upon an opportunity. Recently, I was lucky enough to have another amazing experience for another brand that I work on now, Cetaphil, with a campaign called Game Time Glow, where we tapped into this sentiment of how dads are spending time with their daughters around football, the Taylor Swift effect, so to speak. And we made a really, really quickly, we made a video. But we used influencers in particular to socialize that video to get the spread because we didn't have a huge Super Bowl ad buy. And our objective was to interrupt the Super Bowl conversation and quickly, I mean, we did it in 8 days. So the reality of going from video into utilizing influencers to help socialize and distribute the video and make noise, that's how you catch fire. That's how you take something and turn it into a viral moment. But that's also like capturing and tapping into conversations on channels, alt channels like Reddit, and stepping into communities. So utilizing influencers to help promote and guide conversation in the places where people are talking is really the best use of influencers. It's how you interject yourself into culture. In the PR space, I tell my teams and the people I work with, content is context for earned media, meaning that there isn't a reporter out there today that's going to write a story we pitch unless they see that there's social heat in the ecosystem, that conversation is happening, and influencers are some of the best ways to get social heat, to make conversation happen out of thin air. And when you do that right, then you get earned coverage, then you get public relations. You can make an advertising campaign sing louder than any media buy ever could.
Many years ago, I heard a creative director and I say something, and I want your opinion on it. He said, "The age of the big campaign is over." He said, "Now what we have is a brand voice, and we just go around igniting little fires around that brand voice." And I think in many ways, the idea of influencers and content is very much an embodiment of that statement. Do you agree with that statement? Do you disagree with that statement? Do you have a way you would modify that statement?
No, I do. It's honestly, I agree. It is really about the little fires that can be ignited. I was at a conference once, heard the CMO of EOS, the beauty brand, basically say she's not looking for viral moments in massive viral moments in her campaigns or in her programming. She's looking to go viral within niche audiences that care about her product. And the idea is sort of like micro viral moments, mini fires, really, I think is powerful because they do add up and get you something big, but you don't necessarily need that big campaign splash. You certainly don't need that big massive campaign investment anymore. You can really be strategic and smart and efficient about how you get those moments.
Wow. Well, you have shaped my opinion of you know, how influencer integrates into a whole campaign, and how to use it in a much more effective way. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I do have one last question.
Yeah, sure.
One last question. And I always ask, I always end my podcast with this because I think the podcasts are at their core are designed to get students excited about this profession. What is the most important, most salient piece of advice that you have for my students? What is the one thing they need to know when they click the stop button?
About influencer marketing, that it, I think, get on board now, understand it now, because it will be the future. It is the future. It's the present and the future. I think there are, get smart about AI is the other thing that I'll say, because I think it's fun. We haven't even seen how much it's going to change our world. So your students today have every opportunity to be on the bleeding edge of whatever is coming. You and I might be playing catch up for the most part, or like, well, maybe it's not going to matter, but I think we were there
when the internet came out, and we said, this is going to be something. And then we were there when mobile came out. We said, yeah, this is going to be something. Now we're there when AI, but they're the students who are going to figure it out, right?
We've seen more change, I think, than any other generation. The one thing I also will say, I tell students and young people, always be early. Be the first one in the office, because then nobody really knows what time you got in, and you're always ahead of it. So when it comes down to it, be the first one there.
Excellent advice. I couldn't agree with that more, except I'm always the first one there, so I'll know when you got in. Corey, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing with the students. This has been really, really fantastic.
Thanks, Neil.
This has been Conversations with the Creators, sponsored by St. John's University's Master's Program in Integrated Advertising Communications. Thanks to all our guests, my podcast partners, Audrey Siegel, Christine Munk, and our producer, Hedia Naziri. Keep on ideating.